You're listening to the Freedom From Addiction podcast. Hear what leading addiction and recovery experts are talking about, addiction trends, topics, and challenges, as well as personal stories, research, practices, and advances that point the most promising way to freedom.
And welcome into the Freedom From Addiction podcast, coming to you straight from the campus of Adult and Teen Challenge Mid-South here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm your host, Derek, Creative Outreach Director for our campus. In the studio again this week is our President and CEO, Dr. David McNabb, along with our Vice President, Jeff Cleeter. And if you have missed the last few episodes, we have been talking about enabling. I would greatly encourage you to go back and listen to part one of enabling in episode number two. And then today we're going to be finishing up talking about enabling. And guys, can we take the next 30 to 60 seconds and kind of debrief for those that maybe need to go back and listen and discuss what we talked about in our last episode?
Derek, that's probably a good idea, not only for our listeners, but also for us as well. We started in this whole discussion of enabling by introducing the fact that enabling is only one portion. It's only one part of the grief process. And when we start to think about the grief process and start seeing as all these are being a pieces of an enabling, of which is just one, we can kind of see how there is a process that we work through in dealing with someone that we know and love who's struck an addiction. Now, the one thing that we started with, I think on that second episode of our podcast, was the aspect of denial. Denial being the fact that we don't want to bring ourselves to admit the fact that somebody that we love is actually dealing with an addiction, addictive behavior. From denial, it translated into the whole concept of anger or frustration of not knowing how to deal with and how to deal with the logic of someone who's turning their back on how they were raised and all of the embarrassment and the difficulties that comes with that. And then that frustration, because you have lost that concept of control of someone dealing with addiction, we begin to try to bargain with the whole idea of how, you know, can we help them? Are they willing to let us to help them in some way come out of that addiction, or at least provide them with some assistance? You know, and that's where we have all kinds of other emotions that come in there, where we try to regain the control that we've lost through the process of, and that bargaining aspect of it is actually the enabling step of this whole grief process. But Jeff, as we left off in our last podcast, we introduced the idea of guilt being such a primary issue for the parent or for the loved one who's dealing with someone with addiction. Guilt begins to creep in there, and that impacts how we are motivated to try to enable or bargain with someone to regain that control. Guilt is really a big deal in this process.
Yeah, it really is, and that's why it's important for us, particularly as parents, or maybe it's a spousal situation, to go to that person and get our conscience clear for the mistakes that we've made and work through that process, regardless of how they respond to that, so that that guilt will not be able to be used as leverage.
Exactly. Exactly.
And of course, you know, as we move from one and into the next, you know, when our entire focus is on, you know, our feelings of loss, you know, keeping our loved ones safe, you know, trying to help them make better choices, we experience those ongoing feelings of helplessness and hopelessness, and which should lead us to the next common stage of grief, which is depression.
Depression. That's a familiar word.
Yeah, and it's not like the clinical type.
Right.
You know.
Right.
It's something that comes with, of course, that's more what you're familiar with.
It is.
In the grief process.
And Jeff, that's probably a good opportunity to kind of to let everyone know that in these terms that we're referring to here, I think our intro, as it's coming on, it talks about experts in the field of addiction, and I so appreciate us having that intro. But the truth of the matter is, these steps of grief that we're talking about, this is not clinical stuff. I mean, when we go through issues in our own lives, if it's the breaking of a relationship, or it's the or if it's the loss of a possession, or whatever it may be, we go through a time of depression where we're just down.
Because it's a part of the grief process.
It's part of the grief process. And it it's not necessarily, when we talk about depression, you're correct, it's not the depression that has to be diagnosed by a physician due to a chemical imbalance or whatever else. We're just talking about the fact you've got someone that you love, and you've dealt with all these aspects. You've tried to well, actually, you've not tried to enable, but you've done it inadvertently. And now you come to this place, you've gone through all these things, and now it's not worked. And now you're going through this whole idea of, what am I going to do? Woe is me. How do I fix this situation? We're in a hopeless situation.
And it comes in as I experience the repeated failures in the other episodes we talked about, mm-hmm. the repeated failures of the bargaining process or the enabling, only to realize that as hard as I tried, I cannot change my loved one.
Exactly.
And that can be when you've done so much and worked so hard on all these other levels going through this process, and all of a sudden I finally realize I can't do it. That is very depressing.
It would be very depressing, and we have seen the looks on the faces of the parents and those that have loved those who are caught in addiction when they'll call us and say, you know, you guys, you have the ability to talk about a new way of life, a new way of having hope, and all these kind of things, and we have to look at them and say these words that almost every listener is going to hear, know already in their heart: we can't help somebody who does not want to be helped. And it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter if you know what you're doing, or if you don't know what you're doing. It's going to be frustrating for everyone if they do not desire to be helped.
You know, it's possible that some people might be uncomfortable with the word depression, but discouragement might be something that if someone does want to see themselves as, I'm not a depressed person.
Right.
Yeah, of course. You know, we're not talking about a clinical depression. We're talking about a process of grief that people go through. So maybe that word would be a little bit better. Man, this is just, I'm totally discouraged. And even when we talk about depression is really something that we experience. You work a really hard physically, and you do a lot of work, and you expend a lot of energy. And then at the end of the day, your body is technically depressed. That
it
means
is.
It's tired, it's worn out, and what you need is rest in order to recovery, uh-huh. to recover. That's what the word depression is. Context means, but not something clinical or something's wrong that I need to get right.
Well, the simple fact, you know, this is interesting how this comes in, because I've often made the statement that the only individual that I know who is more helpless than someone caught in addiction is the person who is trying to help them
right.
come out of addiction. And to be that person where you can't find the next step, you can't find your foothold, you don't know, everything you've done up to this point has been wrong. And you can't, you know, if you're kind of a person who tries to work through logic and methodology like I do sometimes, if I don't know what my next step is, everything else has failed, then that's going to be the epitome of discouragement, because I don't know what else to do.
It's because the next step that I'm thinking of is the next step on how to change that other person.
Right. Exactly.
And of course, you know, internally, I hate it when I start getting into the depression part. You know, internally, I hate it. But I'm beginning to realize there's nothing I can do about it. Mm. And of course, sometimes that's hard to grasp, because we might feel like, well, does that mean I'm just giving up? Mm. Well, I'm giving up doing it my way. That's definite. I have to externally stop trying to make those things different.
Right.
Because I want them different, even though internally I may still want those things to be different, which, again, because of those things aren't different, it makes me feel helpless.
It would.
It makes me discouraged. It makes me feel depressed. You know, whatever word kind of sticks there. But this is not supposed to last forever. Because that's why it's called the grief process. It's not supposed to last forever. It's a process that, when done properly, leads to healing. It's not supposed to be a place, or I say it's not supposed to be a level that I'm supposed to get stuck in.
Right.
And of course, if I find myself, and someone listening might find themselves stuck in one of these grief levels when it comes to an addicted loved one. And that should probably be a sign that if you're stuck, you need to get some help.
You do, because when you get to that condition, we've seen this happen over and over again, you're not helping anybody.
Exactly.
And addiction has then, at that point, it's accomplished what we refer to as the enemy, what the enemy set out to do to begin with, is not just to afflict the person with the addiction, but to basically infest the entire family. And that's what we have, and that's not what God intended.
And it's not uncommon. That would be an important process to think through when it comes to grief. And those who have experienced even grief over the death of a loved one would be familiar with this. Sometimes you get to that spot of depression, and you think you're going to be going on to the next one, but because it is so discouraging, you start saying, okay, I need to do more, and then you start jumping back up the ladder and start going back into the enabling process, or maybe even get back up to the anger and may even back up to denial and then have to start walking back through those levels again. And that can repeat several different times. Sometimes in my issues in my life are at one stage of grief and other issues in my life are at another stage of grief. And all that's just normal. I'm not going nuts, not going crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just that's what's normal.
Exactly. Well, this is the thing, you know, that I've seen on so many occasions. Like I've said, I've had, for better or worse, I've had extensive, you know, experience with funerals. And the concept of losing someone for eternity, well, not for eternity, but for at least in this life until you see them in eternity. But the idea of living the rest of your life without that, the presence of that loved one, is the most terrifying thought you can possibly imagine. But this is where I've seen God's grace and his presence come into a place unlike anything I've ever seen, where that person that's standing there next to that casket is saying, I don't know how I can do this. I can't get through this. This is the most horrible thing. I wish I could go with them. And then a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they're actually finding themselves able to smile again. They're able to start to function again. And that does not mean the tears won't come back. That doesn't mean that it lessens their affection toward the person that's gone, but it's that process is moving in the right direction.
And it's moving towards that final level and that we're talking about.
Yes.
Acceptance. And of course, now I can see where someone, when we're talking about acceptance and we're talking about a loved one who's in addiction, that could be misunderstood if it was taken out of context. Because in this context, I can hear someone thinking, what? So I'm just, acceptance. So I'm just supposed to, accept, my loved one's a drug addict. That's that, and that's the way it's going to be. That's not what we're talking about, because we're not talking about the other person when it comes to the grief.
Right.
We're talking about what's going on inside of me. And acceptance is really, when I just realize that my power is limited.
It is.
There are definable boundaries. And I think what's significant about there being definable boundaries and that my power is limited is realizing that God designed things this way.
Mm-hmm.
God designed that I wasn't able to change another person so that no one else was able to change me, and that it would have to be between me and God, and it would be between that person and God.
Free will is a pain, man.
I have the power. Yeah, I have the power to make choices for my life, but God does not allow me to make choices for other people's lives.
Funny how that works.
Isn't it, though?
Mm.
I think one of my daughters were talking about that. She was reading a quote by C.S. Lewis. Someone was asking, about this issue of free will. And C.S. Lewis brought up the fact that, it bothers you that you have a free will reinforces the fact that you want a free will.
Right.
I want to make my own choices. We are designed to want to make my own choices. And so we end up dealing with God on a personal level just between he and I.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means he's able to get a hold of us. The, acceptance says, I've come to grips with the reality that God has greater purposes in my loved one's life, that he himself is going to continue to do a work in them. And of course, he's going to do that without my help. And of course, when I talk about help, that's help from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
From God's perspective, that'd be interfering. Very different. Really, when we begin to be honest, just really honest with ourselves, and that transparent honesty, that honesty leads to brokenness, and then it's the brokenness that allows us to find our strength in God, and that's where the real support comes in. Rather than trying to live in the illusion of trying to find my support by changing that other person, and of course, as I find that strength in God, this is where the journey to a new hope begins, where it begins to spring up, because it gives space for God to work in my loved one's life, because my own grief is no longer getting in the way. And of course, this is where hope begins to come alive again.
Jeff, what you said just right there, and then you made a statement earlier regarding brokenness. I find it somewhat ironic that when it comes to the acceptance, this last stage of grief, that when it comes to acceptance, there's got to be brokenness on both sides of the hurt. On both
that
sides,
is so true.
On both sides of the addiction, you've got the parent. Let's put it in this particular case, the parent who is grieving over the addiction of a child. Let's say a son, to make the application here, just in a moment. The fact that there comes to a place where the parent has got to let them go into the foreign land, and with that, there is this horrible concept of the fact I cannot control them, why they're there. I can do nothing to help the situation. And on the other side, and if you can dare jump with me into Scripture, there is a child who has been dealing with this issue, dealing with this addiction, who is about to put his face in the pig trough for who knows how many, the 15th time. And he begins to look into that trough, and he has to do it because there finally, at long last, there was no one there, and you use the term correctly, there's no one there to help, according as a parent would say. And yet as that is taking place, because there was no one there to help, no one there to give him anything, the very next statement in Scripture says, and he came to himself. There came that place where he not only did the parent accept the fact this young man was out of his control, there came the point where this young man realized that this whole situation is something that he has to surrender.
And he went through his own process.
Yes, he did. And we don't understand that. We don't necessarily perceive that, because it's on. It's sometimes it's invisible. It's beyond our ability to see it. But Jeff, this has been a tremendous look at this concept of enabling as it fits into the process of grief. And I truly hope that our listeners have at least had some things that they can begin to think more about when it comes to how they deal with someone who is stuck in addiction, and how they can get to the place where they can not do what they think needs to be done, which they think is help, and God truly would see as interfering with what he's trying to accomplish in their young one's life.
And that's bring hope to both parties again.
You got it.
Loved what you've heard on this week's episode? Well, the answer is simple. It would mean the world to us if you could head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review and feedback. Spreading the word really is the best way to grow our podcast and achieve even greater things. Thank you.